pretend to show success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. United we stand, divided we fall.
Welcome one and all to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. I've been getting a few messages and comments and such from listeners, which I've been quite appreciative of, to tell you the truth. Lots of offers for help, things of that nature. And I thought to myself, well, you know, how can somebody, a listener, actually help the show? Well, first of all, we always appreciate donations. If you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, that's the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We have a little donate button there. But in general, getting the word out about the show is the main name of the game, isn't it? You know? If you like the show, get people to listen to it, and it's the best way to help the show is to help it spread, methinks, somewhat virally. I'm sure my cackling is somewhat infectious, should hope. I've got to read out one of these comments here, actually, from Nate in Cincinnati. Well, what I can say, Vinny, you have an amazing attitude, and I appreciate, and a fabulous sense of humour. Find myself looking forward to not only your show, but your energy you bring to the depressing subjects you address. Cheers, mate, to the positive vibes you interject into every show you do. Keep up the energy and your career will continue to succeed. You are one in a million, my friend. And Will, you bloke, I must say, I never thought I would meet or listen to someone who thought precisely like myself. I've been awake for a similar time frame as yourself, and I feel that the comments you make half the time are coming straight from my brain. You really need to debate more climate cultists because it's amusing to hear them squirm. They have nothing. And I love how you will not let them dance away from your points even if they go on a 10-minute ramp of BS. I would love to hear your thoughts on some subjects you haven't mentioned on the show before, and I'd love to hear your take on some books that I know you would enjoy. With all that aside, I'd love to help you in any way possible that I can. I live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I'm trying to wake people up every day, but I feel like there should be more that I can do. And it's kind of straightforward, isn't it? There's always more that you can do, because there's no limits to what you can do. Really, apart from, you know, the obvious, we've all got a limited time frame here. We're not going to live forever, so we may as well make our lives count for something. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and thank you very much for listening. We'll be right back with a very special guest.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing. Critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. Was a loser now will be later to win. For the times they are a-changing.
Oh, for the times they are a-changing. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You cruise in there, you can have a look at our featured video. There's this dude in Canada who's been looking into the old Rockefeller family. And a very interesting little diabolical story with these filthy scumbag. Yeah, there's seven words that you can't say on radio. I'm not going to breach FCC regulations, even though the Rockefellers created them. Now, Standard Oil, back in the day, right, first started up, and in order to bankrupt all the other little oil-producing people, they decided that they would make some deals with the railroad systems so that they would have regular runnings at a very, very cheap price. And what they did is they undercut their competition and drove them out of business, you know, quite conveniently for them, of course. And on top of that, you know how at the moment we use barrels of oil? Well, back then they used to use barrels of oil too, wooden barrels. And guess who bought them all out so that nobody else had anything to barrel their oil in? The Rockefellers! Thank you very much. And after you take over the oil supply, which if anybody in this industrialized world has any idea about, is probably the most strategic and most pervasive resource on Earth. Certainly has granted any oil company with ridiculously large amounts of power to lobby against governments. And it's gone to the point now where mega corporations can now, in fact, dictate to governments what their laws are. More or less, and I'm sure everybody in New Zealand experiencing Hobbit Gate, as it's fondly referred to. My friend of mine, Jane Kelsey, is a university lecturer here, that when Warner Brothers came in, they can just tell the government, hey, you've got all this labor law legislation that allows people to be treated as employees and have special privileges, like, you know, holidays and protection against unjustified dismissal, that kind of thing. Gone! In a day, quite literally. And the Rockefeller Foundations and Standard Oil and all of these scumbags were absolutely no different. After they gained control over the oil industry, they just thought it would be a freaking fabulous idea to get into pharmaceuticals and the financial industry. Not necessarily in that order. Because, of course, Rockefeller funding and Rockefeller propaganda, fantastically enough, was responsible in part for the incredibly fabulous Federal Reserve Act of 1913, which Woodrow Wilson said, I'm a most unhappy man. The country, and words to the effect, that the country is no longer governed by the will of the people, but the will of an incredibly tiny minority of powerful men, namely the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers. Oh, scumbags. The tyranny is just so bad. And of course, being involved in finance means that you have to finance both sides of every major war, which they did. I mean, how do you think Hitler got all the money to finance his enormous war machine? Mostly from Wall Street. You know, it's not that difficult to figure out. I remember I was talking at a party one time, and this guy was talking about the Yugoslav war against the Kosovars. And I said, oh, well, bloody bankers, up to their old tricks. And he says, oh, I don't think bankers had anything to do with it. And I go, really? Where do you think Slobodan Milosevic got all his money from? How do you think he financed his enormous war machine? I mean, come on. You know, things don't exist in a vacuum, man. people don't fire factories into life unless there ain't, unless there's some money to pay their employees. Come on. Pretty straightforward, really, when you think about it. And we had Pam Killeen on the show a little while ago. I believe it might have even been 2 weeks ago. Talking about how the freeze-dried food industry had an awful lot of profit sharing and invested an awful lot of money during the war years so that they could feed the troops when they were out on their own for a wee while. And, of course, after the war was over, when the need of such freeze-dried foods and ready-to-eat meals and all of this such with the foil fields and whatnot was no longer relevant, they said, hey, this stuff has terrible health ramifications. So the Rockefellers, of course, investing in this, decided that not only was their food going to make people very, very sick, but they could also make an awful lot of profit out of prescribing drugs to the people who got sick. And that's basically the pharmaceutical industry and the food industry and in a nutshell. Right? Food industry's job is to keep you sick, and the pharmaceutical industry, both of course explicitly linked, sit back and wait for you to get sick enough that you'll want a pill to help you with it. But of course this pill will just be another poison that'll just keep you more sick, for which of course there will be another pill. Oh yes. Oh, the tyranny. And today, if anybody looks around, we're all getting really fat, we're all getting really sick, and we're all getting really dumb. That's exactly the way they like it, isn't it? Fat, dumb, lazy people are so easy to control, especially if they're ill. You know, you have any idea how difficult it is to think when you're really sick? You know, it's not that easy at all, is it? What better state of being to have for a population that you're hoping to ruthlessly enslave? Oh, yes. I love being a tyrant. I like to enslave other people. Mm-hmm. It's my bag, baby. And old Rockefeller, David Rockefeller, supposedly when he was globalist kingpin, He says in his own memoirs that, oh, there's all these people out there that are accusing me of being part of a criminal conspiracy and this, that, and the other, that we're part of this secret cabal that hopes to enslave humanity by making it an all-encompassing world government. And if that's the charge, then yeah, that's exactly right. I'm guilty and I'm proud of it. He actually said it in his own memoirs. Right? And when I go out and I tell people about this, hey, look, we've got these uber scumbags trying to enslave us all, and they admit that they're doing it, I call Gaga, I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist. Okay, check it out. It's, you know, it's when people don't look at the facts in any way, shape, or form that you get these type of scumbags in control. Don't you? Right? If the price of freedom is to be eternally vigilant, then as soon as we become lazy and complacent and value entertainment over education, preferably not state education, or basically more like a translation of which is indoctrination, if we let go of our responsibilities in our society, then there's definitely a big freaking problem, okay? It's the only way that a society can really sustain itself is if people are responsible for the society, much like the way that an individual can sustain themselves by being responsible for themselves. You don't fly off the handle and go friggin' nuts all the time just because, I don't know, you got out of bed at the wrong side this morning. No, it takes some responsibility. If you're sick and infectious, stay home. If you're dumb and you don't know anything, get educated. Why not? I mean, what have you got to lose by learning things? People say, oh, ignorance is bliss. I say, well, no, actually, ignorance is bliss only for the people that manage to profit from your frickin' ignorance. All right? And it's those dumber kind of people that really believe that. They believe that knowing jack about everything is a brilliant idea. Speaking of which, did you know the missile was fired off the California coast? Pentagon's trying to find out if a missile was fired off the coast and who launched it, you know? what was going on here? This is from the Daily Telegraph by Nick Allen in Los Angeles. it's crazy, man. You see this enormous trail following this projectile. What appeared to be a large missile was seen shooting into the air about 35 miles west of LA and leaving a long vapor trail over the Pacific Ocean. The U.S. Navy, Air Force, and other military organizations are examining a video of the event captured from a passing news helicopter. And Colonel Dave LaPan, a Pentagon spokesman, said nobody within the Department of Defense that we've reached out to has been able to explain what this contrail is or where it came from. On other news, we have a very special guest on the line here. We've had her on the show before and sent to us by our somewhat fabulous producer. It's Pam Killeen of PamKilleen.com, and she's got a little bit of information here to talk to us about drugging our pets. Is that right, Pam?
Hi, Vinny. Listen, I can barely hear you. I don't know what the problem is on my end. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine, but you'll probably have to turn your volume up as much as you can if you want to hear me, apparently. So let's see how we go. Yeah, well, just lead off for us, Pam. You wanted to come on the show specifically to breach the subject of pet farmer, basically, with a PH.
yes. They don't have enough customers in humans, so they've been going after, you know, dogs and cats and other animals, you know, domesticated animals, just to increase their profits. And so I had mentioned to you that we had a documentary here recently on the CBC in Canada talking about this upcoming market. And really what the pharmaceutical industry is after is 140 million pets here in North America. And of course, what you have is, you know, you have this camp of veterinarians who say, you know, just train your pets properly and, you know, they'll be fine. And then you have this other camp of veterinarians who are really thinking very much like medical doctors today, who say, you know, it's a lot quicker just to medicate them. Don't, you know, spending time training them and, you know, doing behavior modification. If your pet's a little unruly, you know, that takes too much time. So let's just sedate them. Let's just use chemical constraints. It's just amazing how they're using the same approach with pets as they have been with humans now for 20, 30 years as they've been increasing their empire.
Sounds about right. And after all, Pam, they've got a winning formula here, don't they? They've got a duped population that loves medication. Why not? Why not?
Well, that's exactly it. It's a quick fix. And, you know, they really think that they're getting a service rendered to them. They go in looking for a service and they come out thinking that they had a service properly rendered to them. But they really aren't doing their pets any favors, just as much as human beings that go in with complaints of everything from depression to anxiety, sleep problems, and so on. Rather than teaching them good principles, like especially dietary principles, they're basically just using chemicals, and that's not solving the problem. And even in this documentary, with regards to pets, they never once mentioned the word diet or nutrition with regards to these pets. You know, certainly, you know, there's obviously room for behavior modification and training and all these sorts of wonderful things. But, you know, when a pet is showing very, very serious behavior problems, just like a human, got to look at the diet. And one thing I actually put on my Facebook page had something to do with the history of Dr. Francis Pottinger, who did a 10-year study and wrote a book about it. And the book is called The Pottinger's Cats. And what he did in the 1940s and so on is he took hundreds of cats and he put them on a traditional diet, a diet that mimicked what a cat would eat in nature, for example. So the cat would have been fed things like raw dairy and entrails, like things like, you know, kidney and liver. That's what an animal in nature would eat when it kills its prey. Whereas he would compare these animals that were fed their traditional foods to cats who were fed processed foods, things like pasteurized milk or, you know, dried cat food or canned cat food or what have you. And sure enough, after about three or four generations where the cats were fed the processed foods, the cats displayed a lot of physical and behavior problems, whereas the cats that were fed their traditional foods were really incredibly healthy and fertile on top of that. So whereas after three or four generations on the processed foods, of course, even these cats were displaying things like symptoms such as infertility. So, you know, this is a major, major study that was done, and a very, you know, it foreshadowed a lot of the things that we're seeing today as we're into our third and fourth generation of humans eating highly processed foods.
I mean, we've got to go back to some description of decent food, right? And apparently, pet food didn't exist too long ago. Everybody used to just feed the pets off the scraps from the table and they were fine. And now we've got this enormous pet food industry that profits from selling our pets, you know, nutrient-deficient foods, just like they're selling to us.
Well, yeah, and using, you know, downer cows and, I mean, God knows what from the factory farm system. And so you're seeing, you know, even things like melamine showing up in pet food and things like, you know, the infectious problems that you'd get from downer cows as well, mad cow, whatever, other problems that you might see in a factory farm setting. But, you know, this problem is going from bad to worse. And really, you know, as long as they take their eye off the target, of all these multinational companies get to keep making lots and lots of money and really profiting off of our demise. So I wanted to ask you, Vinny, I gave you a little homework to do. To study a movie, and I wanted to know if you had seen the movie, because it does. It's another movie that foreshadowed a lot of what it is we're talking about here.
I did watch Soylent Green. Is people!
I'm so proud of you, Vinny.
Our special guest is Pam Killeen from PamKilleen.com on the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, and we'll be right back after the break with more. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Very special guest is the co-author of the Great Bird Flu Hoax. He co-authored it with Dr. McCullough. I'm sure everybody's very familiar. And also very enlightening conversations we have with old Pam regarding, well, pretty much everything to do with your health. Pam, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back on. I'm sorry about the technical problems earlier.
It's all G unit, as they say. Now, I was thinking that we needed to kind of discuss this pet issue a little bit more, because much like people's kids are drugged because the parents just basically don't know how to raise their kids and don't know how to give them proper nutrition, similar problems, I assume, for pet owners.
Right. And unfortunately, what's happened is they've basically disconnected us from realizing the connection between food and our mood. And so that's happening, you know, across the board, even with pets. And to think about turning to chemical drugs as a solution to the problem, of course, is basically almost like a lazy way out. You know, a lot of people want quick fixes today. This is what I call in my seminars, I call it the silver bullet theory, and there is no silver bullet for health. If you're dreaming that you think you can find a pill to help you recover from whatever ailment you may be suffering with, you know, you're really dreaming. It takes a lot of work to be healthy today, and there's a lot of obstacles up against us in order for us to be healthy today. So, you know, to turn to a quick fix pill and expect it to solve our problems, that's what the multinationals want us to believe, and they've done some very clever marketing to convince us that really these pills are our answer, that they're somehow our salvation. And it's proving, every year that goes by, it's proving that that's just not the case.
I think business in general is kind of following that same line. Don't you think, Pam? It's less about the good product and more about clever marketing these days.
Well, absolutely. And I don't know, I can't remember if we talked about it on your last show, but talking about the work of Edward Bernays and propaganda, and I think I had recommended to your listeners to watch the documentary The Century of the Self, which is a four-part BBC documentary. And what is very telling in that documentary is that the father of propaganda, Edward Bernays, who was very prominent in the 1930s and beyond, he basically looked at consumers as if we were all stupid and that we needed to be told how to think. And so from that principle, from that very principle, he basically created this herded type of mentality where, you know, we all needed to think the same way and, you know, buy the same products. And what is interesting about how they've been able to do this type of marketing is that now if you decide that you want to stop feeding your child sugar, for example, because you know in your heart of hearts that you know sugar is bad for you and bad for your child. So as a mother, you say, you know, or as a parent, you want to say, you know, I want to protect my child, so I'm not going to feed my child sugar. And do you know how many parents I've spoken to who have told me that they have kept their child away from sugar and been ostracized by their communities, been basically said, you're not a good parent because you're not feeding your child sugar. And that's exactly how they were treated. And also, you see the same mentality, this herded mentality, where if you're a parent and you've done a little research and you've looked into vaccines, for example, and you see that vaccines really aren't necessary, they really are not effective, and there may be a downside in terms of triggering all sorts of problems, health problems, just from that vaccine. And so you've done your due diligence and you say, I don't want to vaccinate my child. And what happens is with this herd mentality is they say to the parent, oh, you're not going to vaccinate your child, therefore you are a bad parent. And all these consequences could follow. But, I mean, this is the power of marketing, Vinny. It's exactly what you're just talking about.
Yeah, I know. And for the people that are actually affected by this marketing and general, you know, in your communities and whatnot, it's like one flew over the cuckoo's nest. You're the one sane person in a house full of nuts.
That's exactly right. And you know, you have to stay strong. I know a lot of parents today who really hesitate when it comes to the vaccine issue. And I'm going to be doing a little a talk on that at the end of the month with a local chiropractor, as a matter of fact. And, you know, it's really, really a dodgy subject because so many people have bought into things like vaccines, believing that they really are, in essence, replacing our immune system, our own innate natural immune system, that somehow injecting a foreign protein or foreign proteins into your skin is somehow or another better than what nature could have created. And it's just not the case. I mean, if you look at just vaccines alone and you see the history behind vaccines, as we have improved sanitation and hygiene, that is really what corresponds with the decline of infectious disease, not the introduction of vaccines themselves. And unfortunately, what happened was is as infectious diseases started to decline in the earlier part of the last century, that's what the vaccine industry exploited. They started patting themselves on the back and saying, look what we've done to reduce infectious diseases. And it blindsided consumers into saying, well, couldn't it have been the fact that we now have flush toilets? We wash our hands now, we have chlorinated and filtered water now. Couldn't all of these efforts have reduced infectious diseases? But no, the vaccine industry knew exactly how to exploit the situation, and they gave themselves all of the credit. And really, they don't really deserve any credit, quite frankly.
Well, yeah. what is it? What is it like? I mean, you walk into a school after the school has gotten the best tests in the world, and then you become the principal of the school and say, look at what I've done. Look at all these amazing test scores. It's like, you weren't even effing there, mate. F off. You know, and then he uses that as some description of a tick on his resume to go and get in charge of another school. So we can balls that one up as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, whatever happened to the expression, give credit where credit is due, you know? There's a lot of people taking credit today for things that they really haven't done. And, you know, I'm picking on the vaccine industry, but, you know, I can take that a step further and say, look at in the United States alone, they're spending over $2 trillion every year on healthcare. And for what? For what? That's what I have to ask, when about 84-85% of the population is dying from chronic disease. Are they getting, in the United States, are they getting good value for their money when it comes to healthcare? I don't care if it's private or public healthcare. They're not going to get good healthcare in the United States until they actually address the real problem behind this healthcare crisis, which is basically big food. You know, our last show, I talked a lot about big food and the problems with big food. You get rid of those middle aisles in a grocery store, and that's going to go a lot further than you know, debating over whether we want public or private healthcare.
Oh, but then that'll affect the economy. We won't be able to flush poison through the entire ecosystem and everything. It's called eugenics.
You know? Well, yeah.
Isn't it
yeah,
great
I
fun?
Mean...
We were talking about the health industry on the last show, and kind of saying, you know, every industry and every politician is basically the opposite of what they say that they are. And I was kind of wondering, you know, when did the healthcare industry become the death assurance industry?
Yeah, well, medicine, keep in mind, medicine is a business, you know, through and through. It's strictly that, a business. And, you know, it doesn't benefit them for us to be healthy. If we were all really happy and healthy, you know, the vast majority of these people would not have jobs. And so essentially what they call healthcare isn't truly healthcare. What it is disease management. And, you know, they can't have us dying overnight. You know, so they've been able to, you know, we, you know, have employed lots and lots of different techniques and services and so on to reduce infectious diseases so that we don't die suddenly. And infectious diseases, we've done a great job in order to be able to control these problems. So we're down to about 6.7% of the population dying from infectious diseases. And the people who do die from infectious diseases are usually dealing with other health problems. So, you know, what they have to address is this issue with regards to chronic diseases. And that is what is prevalent today. And that is what they really cannot do anything about, because they're not dealing with the core problem, which is nutrition. And so when people go into universities to train to be nurses and doctors, they really do go in, you know, with really good intentions to come out and help people get well. But by distributing poisons, writing prescriptions, and doing unnecessary procedures, that's not really addressing what is really, really wrong, which is, you know, deficiencies and toxicities, nutritional deficiencies and different types of toxicities, including things like heavy metals, which are a major, major problem. And so, yeah, so until they actually address these problems, unfortunately, consumers, patients, customers, we're all going to be blindsided.
And doctors in the medical profession, they're not aware in particular about this, are they, Pam?
No. But, you know, I do what I do. I teach very intensive seminars. You know, I talk about the work of Dr. Weston A. Price, and I teach about the history of nutrition and food. And more and more, the medical profession is waking up, because they are tired of seeing sick people. They want to see people get well. So I don't like to blame doctors, because I know a lot of doctors. And, you know, I have their blessing to do this work, because they want to see the healthcare system change and really truly apply healthcare rather than disease management. And so what I'm trying to do is address this problem in the medical schools themselves, where doctors can now be trained properly in nutrition. And, you know, whatever little nutrition they're getting in medical schools right now isn't adequate, number one. And number two, if they are getting any nutritional information, it has to do with the low-fat lie, which is what I call the multi-trillion-dollar lie. you know, this idea of all of a sudden in the 1950s, you know, where animal fats and cholesterol joined the dark side, you know, and since we've been believing that lie over the last 50, 60 years, of course, we're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever before in the history of mankind.
Yay! Hey, let's go to Disneyland, you know.
Yeah. Disneyland. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Great poor health. Come on. Do 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 do.
You know, something has to give, really. I mean, when I look around me and especially see the state of minds with regards to children today, and 20% of them during their childhood are going to be diagnosed with some sort of mental disorder, this is not acceptable to me. I don't know anybody who finds that acceptable, except maybe the shareholders for the pharmaceutical industries. I don't know, but really, this situation has got to turn around, and it's not going to turn around from the top down. It's got to turn around from the bottom up. And so that's why I appeal to people on radio shows, because, you know, I haven't yet met a person who, you know, condones the behavior of what's happening right now with regards to this distribution of all these pharmaceutical drugs. And I, you know, everyone I talk to today says it's got to have something to do with nutrition. And so, you know, that's what I did with my current book, Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic, is to go through some really fundamental nutritional principles that can help stabilize your mood, that can help stabilize your health. And nothing I say in the book is complicated. There's no rocket science behind any of this. It's common sense. I think you've had a chance to take a look at my book, right, Benny?
Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to read your book.
But you understand the principles. We've kind of talked about them here and there on your show so far, and it's three square meals. How complicated is that? And today, unfortunately, kids are not eating three square meals. In fact, they're lucky to eat meals, period. For a lot of children today, you know, they're eating out of a bag while they're busy playing video games and not getting what they need in terms of stabilizing their nervous systems. So, you know, hyperactivity, ADD, ADHD, you know, any kind of mood disorder today, none of these are a deficiency in things like Ritalin or what have you. You know, these are really clear problems that can be fixed as long as doctors are open-minded enough to really look at some of these fundamental nutritional principles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm kind of wondering at what point people are going to kind of wake up to this. It's right. Oh my God. Food's actually really good for you if you eat good food. How amazing is that? You know, it's like we've got some kind of a brainwashed, you know, fluoride-filled population that will just absolutely consume anything bad that you get them. But you ask them to learn something that's good for them, it ain't gonna happen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our special guest is Pam Colleen from PamColleen.com, and we'll be right back.
Yeah, and no one like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you want to do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know can flow? Like this,
like this,
like this.
Let's do it.
How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any, not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this?
Rock a show like this.
I don't know anybody. Check to the mic, check the 1-2 from a crew coming through.
Oh yeah. Check it out, baby. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Fabulous guest with us on the line is Pam Colleen from PamColleen.com. soylentgreen.com. Very great stuff. And we wanted to get into, what was it, Soylent Green.
Yes.
And I watched this film, and it's interesting, the entertainment industry, right, when you're aware of the New World Order and the genocide campaign and psyop warfare, etc., films say very different things to you than the average person who think, oh, it's just a random script with some random people and some random actors and some random directors and some random millionaire producers. You know, like, it's a big difference. And for those of you who have not seen Soylent Green, it's a Charlton Heston movie made in the 70s. What was it, 76? Or something. And opening scenes is basically New York, overpopulated, and everybody's kind of living in a sort of environment of total scarcity, I'd probably say would be the accurate way to describe it, where food is scarce, electricity is scarce, and anybody who has anything, you know, like if you're wealthy or anything, you basically... if you die, all your stuff's up for grabs. And that's what happens here. And in the film, Soylent Green, because the food supplies are running so low and the police state measures simply aren't working to keep the hungry population at bay, they've got all these euthanizing program where you go in, if you want to be euthanized, you know, you give them a pay and they give you a full 25-minute show with some lovely music and some lovely imagery while you die from a lovely poison. And then, of course, they dump your body in a garbage truck and then dump it into a a Soylent Green manufacturing plant. And as you come out, you're a little green cracker. That's why, yes. That's where the phrase, Soylent Green is people, comes from.
Exactly. And the movie, you know, foreshadowed a lot of what we're seeing today, believe it or not, with our food system, minus the human body parts, of course. But what I wanted to point out to people with regards to the movie is the movie Soylent, number one, is a huge multinational company that controls about half or more than half of the world's food supply, which is what are we seeing today? We're seeing a few multinational companies controlling our entire food supply, basically. So it looks like when you go into a grocery store, they give you the impression that several companies are, involved in this, grocery store in terms of selling a variety of products. But really, it's just a few companies that are in control of that food. So there you see, you know, sort of something that's being prophetic in that movie. And second of all, before they had Soylent Green, there were other bars that they were selling, and I forget their colors, but they were, you know, Soylent Blue or Soylent Yellow.
It was Soylent Red and Soylent Yellow, yeah.
Soylent Red and Soylent Yellow. And so what they had basically was that these were vegetarian bars before they started adding human body parts, and they were made from soy and lentil. And so that's, again, you know, this movement towards what we're seeing, where they're promoting more plant-based foods in our diets. And of course, this is why we're seeing so many health problems with people today, is because we're not eating enough high-quality animal foods. And especially, you know, where they've scared us off the animal fat and cholesterol, which are really important nutrients that we need to be taking in. So I just wanted to point that out to you, Vinny, because in the movie, you probably noticed that real food, you know, the eggs and the meat and so on, those foods were reserved for the very, very, very rich. So they were exclusive.
Yeah, because they're the only foods that have any nutrition left in them, eh?
That's exactly right. And so this is what we're seeing today, is that, you know, if you look at the inner city Chicago, inner city New York, and you follow any of the work of any food activists that are working on sustainable agriculture, one of the things that they see in inner city areas, and especially in the United States, is you have corner stores. And in these corner stores, they're not grocery stores. They're not selling anything fresh. Everything is out of a package. And it's cheap food, cheap carbohydrate, plant-based foods mostly. And this is the big complaint that some people have, is that they just have no access to gardens. They don't have access to fresh foods. They don't have access to, you know, good quality meat or eggs or cheese or whatever the case may be. Can you imagine living your days eating, you know, canned food and bagged food and all these, you know, highly processed foods? And that's unfortunately what some people only have access to in inner cities.
Now, this is not entirely dissimilar from the great future proposed by Agenda 21, the United Nations, to basically get everybody out of rural areas where they can grow their own food and into cities where they become totally dependent on consumerism by default.
Yes.
And my concern is that people are totally unaware of Agenda 21 and urban, it's kind of like double urbanization, you know, like urbanization happened back during the Industrial Revolution, and it did a similar process to what it's still doing today, which is driving the economic powerhouse out of the farms and rural areas and driving away people from possibly living independent lives, free of the government and free of industry to that to a certain extent. And now it's coming into a system where if you are trying to provide yourself with any form of decent life, it's basically illegal and it won't be allowed to happen. Coming up in hour number two, we're going to be taking some callers, 412-237-2525, 402-237-2525. You can come on with me and Pam. And also, I really wanted to get into the discussion a bit about our health and just how important it is to take some friggin' responsibility for it. Right, Pam?
Right. You got it. You got it.
We'll be right back, folks.
Dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Means a little bit of solidarity, and we have a very short segment here, Pam, and you were talking about something to do with Tavistock or something?
Right, well, the Delphi mind control technique, which is, you know, a lot of the mind control techniques are taught out of an institute in England called the Tavistock Institute, which I'm sure you know about, and at any rate, bottom line is we were talking earlier about the medical profession, and you know, how they basically have created such consensus that they have all the answers to our health woes. And Dr. Carolyn Dean, who's a friend of mine, and she actually wrote one of the forewords in my current book on addiction. Dr. Carolyn Dean wrote the book Death by Modern Medicine, and she herself is a medical doctor. And she's also, in her own way, a very well-educated media scientist. And so she knows a lot about these types of mind control or types of ways of propagandizing people. And so in her book, she talks about the Delphi mind control technique and how it's been used in medicine in order to control the doctors. And it's a very clear technique in order to create consensus. And so what ends up happening is a lot of women in particular come to me and they say, you know, I went to see my doctor and I feel lousy. And I know it has something to do with my physical body influencing my mind. And you know, this doctor wants to, you know, this individual doctor wants me to be on Prozac. But Pam, what else can I do? Because I don't want to go on Prozac, you know. And when they go to the doctor and say, you know, is it something to do with nutrition? The doctor gets mad at them, gets angry at them and says, oh, how, that's preposterous. How could that have anything to do with nutrition? And just take your Prozac and leave. And it's really very, I think it borders on abuse how some of these people are being spoken to by medical doctors. I don't think it's acceptable at all. But what Dr. Carolyn Dean says is that in medicine, in order to create consensus among the doctors, this type of abuse comes from the top down. And so when they're having their conferences and something other than what is being proposed as a solution at the conference is brought up, then the person who's in charge of the conference will basically be verbally abusive to the individual who's speaking outside of their box and tell them to shut up and sit down. And then that treatment goes down the ladder even more and it shows up between patient and doctor. And she describes a very classic example of this at a Codex meeting. And the Codex meetings, of course, are these international meetings where they're trying to create a consensus to control our food, to control basically our bodies from, you know, farm to fork and tell us what is good for us. And she went to an international Codex meeting to witness how these how this organization is trying to make decisions with regards to what it is we should be eating. And there was a woman there who wanted to bring up the issue of the Nestle experience in Africa, where a lot of babies died once they were fed this baby formula. And as this woman got up to speak and say, you know, I think there's a problem with baby formulas, you know, look at the case of Africa where all these babies died. She was told to simply shut up and sit down. That's an example. That's an example of the Delphi mind control technique.
Oh, yeah. If it doesn't suit you, tell them to shut up and sit down because it threatens your fragile sensibilities. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And we'll be right back with a special guest, Pam Kelly.
What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
You down to the propeller heads with the old Shirley Bassey. I love it. As the song would suggest, it's all just a little bit of history repeating. I mean, after all, what we're talking about nowadays with the medical industry, they're no better than witch doctors, you know, telling people what to do for the good of their health, when in reality, it's for the good of the witch doctor to have control over you.
Well, and the faster that you're in and out of the office, the more money they get to make, because the more people they see, that the more money they get paid. And that's a system that's really just unsustainable. It's not working for us. And, you know, when you go in to see your doctor and they may only spend 2-3, you know, maybe at the most 6 or 7 minutes with you, really, what are they going to be able to do in terms of helping you with your health? Not much in that short period of time. They're certainly not going to educate you on nutrition, diet, lifestyle things, but it is a short enough period of time to write a prescription. And that's one system facilitating another system. You see how it's working, Vinny? It's like a you scratch my back, I scratch yours. And until consumers get fed up with this system, unfortunately, I think it's something we're going to have to live with or put up with for many, many years to come. I'd like to see the system change. And like I said earlier, I'd like to see it change within the medical schools. But unfortunately, the pharmaceutical industry has a huge amount of influence right within the medical schools today. There are some students in the United States anyway, who are fighting back and saying, you know, we want the pharmaceutical industry to back off and stop influencing our studies so they can think more independently and come up with possibly even some alternatives to writing prescriptions. That is a hopeful sign. It's just not happening broad-based enough, in my opinion. But at least young kids today are starting to see how they're being manipulated by Big Pharma.
Oh, yeah, and there's so many good documentaries out there, like Making a Killing, about the pharmaceutical industry, basically. I mean, they're just killing people left, right, and center and pocketing enormous profits, you know? It makes me just want to burst into song, you know? Why don't you dope me up, buttercup baby, just to let me down on the big pharma drugs, oh, yeah.
But you see, but it's just, you're so right. I mean, but here's the thing is that people feel lousy, right? So it's one thing for us to say, you know, big pharma isn't helping people. It's not coming up with solutions for people who are dealing with chronic problems. It's one thing to say that, but you've got to also offer people solutions, because what can they do to feel better? I mean, people I talk to on a daily basis, I mean, they're lucky to get to work every day. They feel so lousy. A lot of people that I help can't even work. They're that sick. So, you know, we can't just say, you know, we can't just smear the pharmaceutical industry. We have to come up with real solutions to help these people function again. And that's part of what I do one-on-one, and I teach seminars and I do what I can. But I can't do it. Like, we need more people to learn a lot of the principles that I talk about, which are basic, you know, nutritional principles. And unfortunately, it's this type of information that is being blockaded from us from learning how to restore our health. And right now, even under Obama, Michelle Obama is actually adding insult to injury with a lot of the work she's doing with regards to child nutrition. In fact, a lot of what she's doing is actually, you know, going to make our kids a lot sicker. And she's trying to get into schools and actually reduce the amount of animal fats in children's diets. And, of course, that's opening the doors to more disasters in terms of things like depression down the road. Because, of course, these animal fats are crucial for the development of children and adults, anyway, with regards to their entire nervous system to begin with. So, we're just going to see things go from bad to worse. And I'm trying to stop that. But it's unfortunately, I'm up against a lot of powerful media.
Yep. And guess who owns them? The same people that own the pharmaceutical industries, no doubt. So it's all vested interests, right? So let's put it like this. It's like an enormous web, but there's not just one big fat spider in the middle. There's a bazillion spiders that have all built this web together. And any fly that tries to get into it gets eaten, right? That's basically
exactly
the idea here. Okay, is to trap people and to be able to consume them, you know, to suck your gizzards out through their teeth, you know.
Right, and that's where you have, you know, people who are online, like Dr. Stephen Barrett, who runs Quack Watch or whatever that website is called these days, and he's been hired and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry to go after anybody who could cut into their bottom line. And so what he does all day long on the internet is he looks for people who are offering alternative solutions, offering things like supplements or nutrition as an answer to their health problems. And then he turns around and he creates a smear campaign against that individual and calls them a quack. And then next thing you know, they have a lawsuit slapped on them for making claims that are above and beyond their qualifications or what have you. And these lawsuits, unfortunately, cost a lot of money and take a lot of time away from these professionals. And so oftentimes, or not, you know, a lot of the times anyway, these people can settle. And really, you know, Stephen Barrett keeps getting away with this kind of stuff. But, you know, what he doesn't understand is we live in a free market society here, and there's room for all of us. If people want disease management in a free market society, as long as they know what they're getting, I think that they're entitled to have that, as long as they know what it is that they're buying into. But if people are actually looking to get healthy and want to feel more vibrant and have a lot of energy, sleep well at night, you know what? They're not going to really find that solution by taking a poison pill. They're not going to find it. They have got to do work for it. They've got to change their diet. They've got to, you know, learn better lifestyle habits. And that takes work, but unfortunately, not everybody is willing to do that work. You know, you were talking to me earlier, Vinny, about, you know, getting out, getting fresh air and how great you feel when you get some fresh air and sunshine. Unfortunately, a lot of people may not even have the time to, you know, enjoy those moments in the day, but they're really, really important.
Yeah, and I was saying that people at work, for example, are just absolutely prone to ill health. I mean, after all, stress is probably one of the biggest causes of illness out there, right? And what happens when you're at work? You get stressed out in the main, don't you?
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, everybody gets sidetracked, and you know, then they have no choice because they have no time. We live in this fast new world. Nobody has any time to do research anymore. Nobody has any time to shop around to find other solutions to the problem. The easiest solution for them is just to go to their GP. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, I don't think, but well over 50%, if not even closer to 80% of doctor visits are for psychological problems. I mean, this is huge. Can you imagine that? I mean, that all that money into healthcare, and it's for psychological, most of it's for psychological problems.
Yeah. Well, I can totally believe that. After all, what do you expect from a psychotic society? You know, got a bunch of sociopaths in charge, you know. I mean, I don't think for one minute that you can possibly become the prime minister or any high-up official in a government agency or anything like that without being somebody who's completely detached from the ground floor where everybody's sick and dying, you know. Because if you did, you would actually change things. But nothing changes from the top.
No, and I mean,
down,
when these
it?
Guys,
it only
yeah, when these
from
guys,
the bottom up.
That's right. And these guys at the top, they're making millions of dollars every single year. Millions for what kind of job? And when nobody's getting well, I mean, you know, I mentioned earlier, we're spending over $2 trillion in the United States alone for healthcare. And what are we getting for it? Over 80% of the population dying from chronic disease. Then you see the rise of everything from autism, ADD, ADHD, obsessive compulsive disorder. You see Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. You see all of these conditions surfacing. And yet there are no viable solutions for them. And then you see all these groups crop up that are front groups for the pharmaceutical industry to create these feel-good fundraising campaigns that are not going to come up with solutions for these problems that we see, and really only going to fill the pockets of the pharmaceutical industries. And I feel badly because a lot of people believe in these front groups and look to them for hope, but unfortunately they don't see, you know, the real reason behind front groups. If you look at the history behind front groups, you wouldn't be doing these walkathons. You wouldn't be giving money to people coming to your door. Because I said earlier, keep in mind that medicine is a business, and you know, these groups are designed to create a feel-good sensation behind a cause. I don't care if it's cancer. I don't care if it's Alzheimer's disease. These front groups are designed to basically be a go-between between the corporations and the people, and create these feel-good sensations so they get your money out of your pocket, into their pocket, and give you false hope, basically, in terms of coming up with cures for these problems when they will not come up with cures for these problems. The only real cure is prevention, and prevention comes with, you know, studying a lot of really good, healthy dietary principles.
That's right. And speaking of scams, we've got a big one that runs here in New Zealand every November. We call it Movember, where you're supposed to grow a mustache. Right, and I've got mine starting to grow, but I thought to myself a couple of years ago, hey man, that's really great, you know, we'll do this all for men's prostate cancer, fabulous, fabulous. Before I knew everything that I know now, went out and raised some money, went to the party and all of this, and I thought to myself, well, hold on a second, how is this really all about men's prostate cancer? It's more about just basically looking like a fool with a mustache and drinking. You know, I don't think that helps cancer at all. And more to the point, where does all this raised money go? What happens
exactly
with these organizations once they've racked up your cash?
Yeah, and I know one group that does do some watchdogging over this issue, and that's the Center for Media and Democracy. And you know, they go behind the scenes to see who's funding a lot of these organizations. But, you know, people out there can do their own due diligence and follow the money to see who's really behind a lot of these front groups. I don't have a lot of faith in, you know, 99% of them. There's only a couple out there that I listen to. And, you know, because I know that they're genuine, and I know they're not funded by corporations per se, and what they're doing actually has real solutions to many of the problems that we have. So you have to be very, very discerning. There's no question about it.
And let me guess, all those good groups get ignored and demonized by the media.
it's all about you scratch my back, I scratch yours. They're all validating each other, and that's where I think, you know, consumers again get really blindsided. They see it on the big screen on TV and they think it's real, they think it's credible, and they really, you know, the furthest thing from being credible. I mean, we had an expose here in Canada on these health check labels that are in grocery stores, and here you have this group that, you know, creates this feel-good sensation when you buy a food. You think, oh, it's got the health check on it, therefore it's healthy for me. But then you dig deeper and you find out that this health check is actually sponsored, bought and paid for by the companies that our products are being endorsed by it. And they're paying, you know, $2 million in endorsement fees in order to get that label put on the product. It's just, it's incredible. And here I feel bad because consumers think that it's a, you know, it's got this check on it, it's got to be good for me, but they don't understand the politics going on behind the scenes.
And that's why I think everybody kind of reverts to calling you a conspiracy theorist, right? Is because they simply don't understand the issues, you know?
Well,
it's textbook here. If you look at pretty much any organization, whether it be a business or a health organization or a government, usually corrupt to the core, usually financed by the same people that finance wars and all of this other stuff, in the main. Right? And there's all the same clique. And I see this over and over again. It never stops, right? And it's because of the fact that the population has become happy with ignorance, have become complacent, have become apathetic, that it keeps continuing to happen. And at some point, people really do have to think about, what are you going to do about it, okay? People think that that phrase is a rhetorical question. Oh, what can you do about it? And it's just like, that's not a rhetorical question. You're actually supposed to try and find an answer, but you can't find the answer unless you know what the real problem you're looking at is.
Yeah, no, that's well put. And that's why I touch on Aldous Huxley's book, Brave New World, in my book on addiction. Because, of course, in Brave New World, you know, these people are all mindless drones, consumeristic, you know, materialistic, mindless drones. And they're all drugged up with this one drug called Soma. And so they can't think independently. They have to be told how to think, and they have to be, you know, their actions every day are very predictable. And, you know, there's really nothing creative going on inside of their brains whatsoever. So they can't think for themselves whatsoever. And that's why I said, you know, drugs are very, very powerful. They've been used for centuries as a form of social control. And now today, we have, you know, 50% of the population in the United States taking at least one prescription drug. And that, on top of that, you still have things like caffeine and you have sugar and so many other potential addictions to basically give people a better state of being, because they have to medicate themselves today because they feel so lousy. They have chronic fatigue, they have depression, they have anxiety, they don't sleep at night. This is a serious, serious situation to be in as a society, and it's a serious message to send to our children to say, oh, if you feel lousy, all you have to do is take a pill or drink a coffee or eat more sugar, and that'll give you, you know, a better state of mind to be in. What about the message that, you know, maybe we should be in this healthy state of mind to begin with and not have to rely on drugs to medicate ourselves? And so
I love Soma. It puts my brain in a coma, makes me depressed and wanna be alone.
And so what are we going to do now that our kids are taking pharmaceutical drugs, you know, to help their mental state? What happens in their 20s and 30s and 40s when they're so potentially mentally unstable that they are not even there to take care of us, Vinny, when we're in our 80s? You know, they're not going to be able to do it. They're not well today. They're not being told why they're feeling unwell. They're just being told, you know, take this pill. And then down the road, of course, they're going to feel even worse. And so, you know, they're really not going to have enough energy to take care of us when we need some attention.
Yeah, well, that's what the wonderful nursing homes are good for, because then we can just, you know, go in there, get doped up, start drooling on ourselves and, you know, pulling donuts in the car lock with our mobility scooters. That's going to be awesome.
Oh, no. Getting doped up on Heldol and things like that. You know, that's...
Oh, yeah.
These are the most honorable people in society, and look at how they're being treated today. It's disgusting.
Yep, and I don't think if you lax on your respect for your elders that you're really going to get any respect from your offspring. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our special guest is Pam Killeen, and we'll be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. 402-237-2525 is the hotline to call in and get your dose of Soma. Our special guest is Pam Killeen from PamKillane.com, and obviously we're talking about health and that kind of thing. And kind of reminds me, Pam, you were saying that, you know, I know this conspiracy stuff a little bit better than you, and you've kind of decided to focus on food and nutrition and that sort of aspect. And I would probably say that, you know, while I have a lot of general knowledge about stuff, when it comes down to specifics and actually fully comprehending and being able to go into great detail, that's where my great lacking is. But ideally, I can fill in that gap by bringing in people that are educated in the segments which I want to explore a little bit more. People like yourself, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to know a lot of what's going on behind the curtain. You know, you think about Wizard of Oz and what's going on behind that curtain and who's really pulling the switches. It's very hard to know, you know, what's really going on in many domains, whether it has something to do with the money system, the legal system, the government, the multinational corporations, you know, the Illuminati, New World Order. You know, there's a lot of things to study out there. And of course, there's a lot of different powers behind a lot of the different conspiracy theories. And so it's hard to know who to believe on top of that. And so, you know, you can't, as you know, Vinny, you can't believe everything you read online, and it's very hard to sometimes source some of the information you might be reading about. And so, you know, it's a tough place to be. But a lot of people, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I might be a conspiracy theorist, but what I actually prefer to say is that I'm focusing more on greed and incompetence, because, you know, I think, yeah, sure, you know, maybe there's a plot to depopulate the planet, bring down the numbers from 6 billion, 7 billion people to 500 million. You know, a lot of people will say that type of thing is going on. It's hard to really prove that, I think, you know, tangibly prove that. But really, what if you want to bring it down to something that's really more grounded, I just say, you know what? What's going on is a lot of greed and incompetence. How dare they feed us this food that is creating all these health problems, both mood disorders and physical health problems? How dare they do that to us? How dare they think that we're stupid and we cannot do our own due diligence and find the truth behind what it is that we should be eating in order to maintain our health? How could, after millions of years of evolution, how could man have screwed up so badly, you know, to make it so that we are so sick today? That is not something that we would have done individually or in tribes or packs or villages. But this is something that is endemic to a problem where there's greed and incompetence at the top. Because as you said earlier, how can these people run these corporations and sleep at night when they know how sick we are? It's beyond comprehension to me.
And it's if you watch the film Psy War, which is right on the front page of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, it runs through the Operation Mockingbird, how they put people like Walter Cronkite on the CIA payroll, and also even put military intelligence operatives in the newsrooms themselves in order to feed fake stories in. And also the education system itself has been bought off. I mean, basically, if you have follow the money, and the people with the most money in this world are, usually resigned to a few families, approximately 90% of the world's wealth is controlled by now about 5% of the world's population, and most of that done by very few individuals, and something like close to 85% of the population of this earth own absolutely nothing, right? And my concern is that the wealthiest of the wealthy, with all the power, with all the influence, basically, what does a person with power and influence want? More power, more influence. You know, and it's happening all throughout history. You know, it happened to the Roman Empire, it happened to every single society that ever decided that taking over the world is a great idea, right? And this is what we're in the throwback stages of now, where people are starting to wake up and realize, I'm not 100% sure if any great tyranny has really been overthrown by a true patriots that actually want some good for humanity. It's usually just overthrown by another tyrant. But in this age of technology and the information age, I think that for the first time in human history, it is in fact possible to enlighten people to a point where it is in fact possible to recognize the true cancer that is eating at society. And it is the greed, it is the willingness to accumulate and dominate everything. And this is one of the basic premises of elitism. And elites really love the idea of eugenics, you know. It was argued with somebody the other day about positive and negative eugenics, and I thought to myself, well, there's no such effing thing. You know, it's all negative, okay, because it's all quackery, it's all lies, and it's all meant to have these Freudian loving elitists an excuse that they want to exterminate all the rest of us. And the Georgia Guidestones, erected a long time ago, actually spell out in detail that we want a nice world government, a nice one world religion, a one world language, and it's written in a whole bunch of different languages, right? And it's been there for quite some time, and apparently nobody knows who the heck erected them. But eugenics and genocide is something that I find inevitable when you have vast amounts of power and wealth accumulated into fewer and fewer hands, because they just they stop appreciating life. They stop appreciating the good things, you know, and they start to hate and be upset with even the most happy instance, like life, for example.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have a soul in many cases. They get so distracted with power, money, control, that they don't really look down at what's really happening to the masses. And I don't know how they can basically justify their existence when you look down and you see so many people who are so unhappy and so sick. If you were an ethical, person in control pulling the switches, I think, we need to see somebody step up to the plate to say, let's turn this situation around so that people can achieve their happiness goals and their wellness goals and so on. But that's a utopia. That's not going to happen, because if we're happy and we're healthy, they don't get to make any money. And And you know, I point this out in my book that, you know, there is some research right now showing, ironically enough, that we are less happy today than we were during the Great Depression, when we had much, much less. And you see the rise of this consumerism. In theory, all this stuff, Vinny, is supposed to be making us happy, and it's not. We're actually, you know, less happy today than, imagine that, during the Great Depression, when we had very little. So the rise of the consumerism that has been going on since the 1930s has again basically contributed to our demise. And you know, I think a lot of it has to do with just that, you know, when you can't get that big house, when you can't get that fancy car, when you can't get just the right, you know, size television or whatever the case may be, then you're in a chronic state of disappointment. For many people, when they're in that state of disappointment, they'll go in debt. They'll use their credit cards when they can't. They'll spend beyond their means. And I think that this recent economic crash is a reflection of us, you know, being, and it's not necessarily us per se. I agree with you on the personal responsibility side of things, that we really need to show restraint. But at the same time, I look at it too, that it's been done to us through some very clever marketing to manipulate our minds so that we feel inadequate somehow. We're less of a human being. We're less of a person if we don't have that big house, that fancy car, or that big television. And I think people need to be smarter. I think people need to go back to basics and say, what is it that we need versus what is it that we want?
Yes, and this was part of Edward Bernays' marketing schemes, more or less, is to take away, like if you have a look at the difference between product advertisements pre-1900 and post-1900, where Edward Bernays came in, it used to be all about where the product was made, how long it's supposed to last, the quality of it, etc., etc. It is all about the product. Afterwards, on the other hand, it's all about the lifestyle and the feelings and emotions associated that are supposed to be associated with the product. For example, you've got this wonderful car, it makes you feel like a rich person, or drink Diet Coke, look at all these wonderful smiling people that are drinking it down, and they're all happy. And what it does to the brain is that it associates products with those things that we really, really enjoy, which is family, which is friends, which is love, which is general enjoyment. And ironically enough, once we purchase these things that are supposed to bring those aspects out, they can't, all right? And they can't specifically because of the fact that human beings need other human beings around them to be happy. We're social creatures, right? And as a result, because people get let down consistently every time they purchase something, and yet the facade is not broken, so they go out and purchase another thing. And it's almost as though a small I'm not sure what the word is, a small ability emerges for corporations to manipulate the human condition to a certain extent to make it value things which are worthless. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the main problem, I think, with our society, is that our value systems have been so totally warped that everything that used to be good for us is now seen as bad for us. And everything that used to be seen as bad for us is now being seen as good for us. It's like done a big loop-de-loop on our brains, hasn't it?
Oh, it sure has. And I'll tell you, in my book, I talk about a book called Affluenza. Affluenza, that's essentially what some authors have called this situation where, you know, it's almost like a disease. It's an illness where, you know, affluence has become our goal, and it's really counterproductive. It's really backfiring on us as a society. And it's like you say, we really need to go back to basics. We need to question all of what we're being sold, whether it has to do with, you know, pharmaceutical drugs or food or the latest gadget that might be sold at your electronics store. So we have to go back to saying, you know, is this really going to make me a happier person? Or is it just because they're trying to convince me that this is going to make me a happier person? Because all this stuff sure as heck is not making us happier. And certainly the nutritional information that we're getting is starving our nervous system. So we can't produce the chemicals that we need inside our brains to make us feel happy. So we have a double whammy going up against us. We have the environmental situation going on where we're pressured to spend beyond our means. And then we have internal pressure because we're malnourished and we're not being able to create the chemicals we need in order to be happy. These really intricate neurotransmitters, things like serotonin, that rely on very specific nutrients in order to produce itself. And unfortunately, people turn to things like Prozac instead of food. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of detrimental, very devastating side effects to doing that.
Well, Hippocrates, the source of the Hippocratic Oath, said, let food be thy medicine and let thy medicine be thy food. And it's beyond a joke at the moment. You know, like I can go down the main street of Auckland, New Zealand, and this is in the main city, right? And it will be virtually impossible, and I'm not kidding here, virtually impossible for me to find something healthy to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Our choices have become so restricted, and at the same time, everybody's telling us how great the amount of choice we have is. And there was a little experiment where they gave you a bunch of chocolates to eat, and the people who only had two choices were more satisfied with the chocolate they ate than those with about 50. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Pam Killeen.
I got some so-called friends, they'll smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no.
Welcome back.
Oh, no, no.
Yes, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And kind of discussing about how to make money without deceiving people and without hurting them. And apparently, in this day and age, if you want to make a shockingly large amount of money, that's not possible. You know, and thought, well, what was the old adage of decent consumerism? If there even ever was one, maybe I'm just making this up off the top of my head, but I think that if you're going to be able to finance yourself, you should be able to finance yourself off the backs of the people that you're serving, you know, to a certain extent. If you're doing good for the listeners or something like this on this show, maybe the listeners should be the ones who are the ones who financially benefit you, kind of thing. Almost as if there should be a link between the benefited and the workers, you know, the people who actually produce stuff, right? But I think that what happens in our society is that we've become so depravic that we tend to steal other people's ideas, and we get off the wall, really, when it comes to doing the right thing, because there's no freaking way that you can have a billion-dollar corporation without telling a few lies, mm-hmm. You know? Or without misrepresenting yourself. And this is the true with almost any organization, you know, truth movement included.
Well, it's very Machiavellian, you know, where he says, you know, absolute control. Oh no, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think what he also alluded to is the fact that you cannot run an organization without corruption. It's inherent to any hierarchy. And so, you know, unfortunately, I think it's something we have to live with is corruption. I can't see a world without corruption. It's sad to say. That's just the way it is. But I think if people, if you know that there's going to be corruption, I think it's important to seek it out and find out, you know, the worst of the worst and stay away from it. I mean, in the movie, the documentary, The Corporation, I don't know if you've seen that documentary. It was a Canadian documentary, Vinny.
Oh, yeah.
And it won, you know, the best documentary at the Academy Awards back, I think, in 2005. And basically what that movie outlines is that any company today can basically get away with lies, that they're allowed to lie and that they are above the law. You know, and I think that those are two really important messages that people need to hold on to every single day when they hear a message coming through their television, through the newspapers, that they need to assume that they are being lied to. Isn't that an awful place to be, that we have to basically walk around so guarded that you have to think that before you absorb any information? And then from getting that information, you have to do your own research. It's too bad that it's gotten to be as it is today. And it's just, I think, a reflection of so much competition. It's a reflection of, you know, the growth in population that we've seen over the last couple hundred years. You know, I don't know that it's going to get any better anytime soon. And I don't think it's going to go away, certainly in my lifetime.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect so. I remember I interviewed Bob Chapman, and I asked him, you know, is there any way that you can prevent corruption and stop it from happening? In essence, eradicate it completely from humanity. And he said, well, straight out, no, it's a perennial problem. Okay, and which means it needs to be constantly addressed, constantly kept an eye on, and safeguards need to be implemented and then reviewed and then re-implemented. It's something that you have to keep doing. You know, it's like mowing the lawn, for example. If you stop mowing the lawn, the grass grows out of whack. Much like if you stop cutting off the heads of corrupt people, like the French did. They'll start growing more, you know, like a big corruption hydra.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of the French, at least there's one country where you see people who protest in the streets. You know, I mean, this is one population, one society that knows how to do it. And I think we need to see more protests in the street. I think we need to see more activism out there in order to help change the situation. During the break, I touched on the movie V for Vendetta, which is a great movie and really shows, you know, that we need a revolution right now. In terms of reclaiming both our healthcare system and our food system. Those are the two things I work on in my daily life. I work on trying to change or improve those two systems and educate people so that they can change supply and demand and accordingly work towards a more sustainable, both systems being more sustainable. Because right now, if we don't continue to seek for change and improvement, unfortunately, we're certainly not going to leave the world in a better place for our children or their children, for that matter.
And I think that's probably one of the things that we've lost along the way, isn't it, Pam, that we've forgotten to serve those who are yet to come. Rather, we're busy serving those who, well, have no interest in having any more of us to come. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And I think I told you, you know, all of the with regards to the pharmaceutical industry, and there's been some news lately, you know, saying, basically pointing out where the fines are going in terms of going after a lot of these multinational companies for selling drugs that are being sold off-label, they're being misrepresented, whatever the case may be. And whatever pharmaceutical company you look up today, you will find probably that they've been fined millions, if not billions of dollars for very unethical behavior. And so now, to try and combat some of this, of course, they're trying to come up with a solution by going after the actual CEOs of these companies. And I don't know if it's going to be a viable solution or a deterrent for these companies to behave more ethically. But at least it's something I think that they need to explore, because really we just can't keep increasing the profits of these companies since we've been using these pharmaceuticals. We're getting sicker. We're not healthier as a society, and people need to wake up to this fact that looking for quick fixes is not the answer.
Indeed. Thank you, Pam, for coming on the show with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, you can check out her website. It's pamkilleen.com, and we'll have links to her at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com archives. Pam, thanks very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you again tomorrow.